You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network as we get set to break down the best two words in sports. Game 7, Boston Celtics, Washington Wizards. It has been by far the most entertaining series of the entire NBA postseason. Do either of the teams stand a chance against the Cleveland Cavaliers? I'd say yes. Yeah, they've got a chance. Cleveland Cavaliers aren't invincible. As we saw yesterday, the Golden State Warriors were on the ropes, but the San Antonio Spurs are freaking cursed right now. And I'm a big Greg Popovich fan. It's hard not to like Pops. But I don't know if it was a good idea to rip Donald Trump right before the game as hard as you did. As you're getting ready, you know, you're in the Western Conference Finals. You know, pregame press conference is basically 45 minutes of you calling Donald Trump a buffoon. And I'm thinking, I don't know, dude, it's going to be some sort of bad karma out of this right now. Trump might be a buffoon, but, you know, bad karma, dude, bad karma. So, and then sure enough, Kawhi Leonard. I don't know what Kawhi did. Kawhi upset somebody along the way because the poor bastard sprained his ankle 3 times in the last 10 days. All right, so we're going to talk basketball. Paul Bovey's going to join us. Steve Merrill will join us. I like it when we have multiple opinions. We'll get Bovey's opinion. We'll get Merrill's opinion on the game. We're talking baseball. Richard Griffin's going to step up and in. Long-time baseball beat writer and columnist now with the Toronto Star, the Toronto Blue Jays. Suddenly, the hottest team in Major League Baseball, the Blue Jays. Of 1-8 of their last 10 baseball games. They're on a 5-game win streak and another winnable game tonight as the Atlanta Braves visit the Rogers Center. All right, we've got NHL hockey, Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, I didn't look at the number until right before the show today, actually, because I'm still pissed off about last night's Nashville-Anaheim game. Son of a bitch, man. Last night was a bad night. And I had a great weekend. We swept the UFC. We gave you guys 6 picks. I gave them on a video. I posted them on Twitter. I gave you 6 picks. We went 5-0-1. The Eddie Alvarez fight was a no contest. Crushed the UFC. Hitting the hockey. Hitting the baseball. Riding the Jays. Everything was good. And then last night, there's only a couple of games on the board. I have a great weekend. It's the Houston Astros versus the Yankees. Derek Jeter night. I'm like, I'll get a piece of the Yankees, 6-0 after the first inning. I took the Anaheim-Nashville game to go under the number like an idiot. Even though I was like, I'm only doing this because, you know, and I knew deep down inside, I'm like, if there's going to be a game that things are going to open up, it's going to be tonight, actually. And Nashville are up 2-0. What is it about a 2-0 lead in hockey? I don't get it, man. Like, I really don't get it. Like, in the National Football League, when you're up 14-0, you don't know for sure you're about to lose the game. In hockey, you're up 2-0, it's like, oh, we're screwed. It's like, we're screwed. You got to score the third goal, man. You got that late goal, too. Still upset, man. I'm still very upset about last night. I actually forgot about it for a couple hours. It's all coming back to me right now. But nevertheless, unless you have been in a coma, you know, unless you have been hospitalized or incarcerated, and hell, they have TVs in jail and they have TVs in the hospital. So unless basically you were in a coma or you were passed out all weekend long, you know, trying to shake off a bender, you're probably aware that it was Derek Jeter. Number two, Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter last night. What's amazing about this, Derek Jeter's number two, retired. He's got his space in Monument Park in the outfield of Yankee Stadium. What's amazing about this is you will never, ever see a New York Yankee baseball player ever with a single digit ever again. Think about how insane that is. Like numbers 1 through 9, taken. You know, it's like a parking spot. Yeah, this spot's reserved. No. Numbers 3, 1, and 9. That's how deep the New York Yankee legacy is. But it's amazing. You know, Derek Jeter has sort of been out of the limelight for a couple of years. But if you follow sports closely, you're aware he's one of the potential buyers of the Marlins. So, you know, Jeter's been around the game still. But it's amazing. A couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, when the baseball season started, we talked about the poll that ESPN did. The 50 all-time most popular athletes in American sports history. And there wasn't one current baseball player in the top 50. And the highest ranked baseball player actually was Derek Jeter. And Derek Jeter was ranked 13th on this list. So Derek Jeter's popularity, he's still more popular than anyone in the bigs right now. More popular than Babe Ruth was. And I think there was only three players actually on the damn list out of the top 50 all time. And it was Derek Jeter, 13. I think Babe Ruth was like 27th. And my boy Pete Rose clocked in at 50. He squeezed in a backdoor cover for Pete Rose. So Derek Jeter's popularity, unparalleled. Yet, you know, like a lot of popular athletes, there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of critics and a lot of jealousy. And a lot of people, and I saw last night the Derek Jeter battle began to rage once again. You know, Derek Jeter wasn't that good. Derek Jeter was overrated. Derek Jeter was never even the best player in baseball. Derek Jeter might not even be the best player on his own team. Derek Jeter was at the right place at the right time. There was a tweet that somebody put out. They replaced the stats on the monument. It's like, Derek Jeter's accomplishments. Yeah, this thing's freaking awesome. Unable to move to his left or right during his career. Jeter defined right place, right time with the Yankees. setting an example for any mediocre ball player that dreams of being surrounded by better players that gets less credit. He retired having been part of some of baseball's most iconic moments, like that time the other Giambi brother didn't slide, or when Jeter caught a pop-up in fair territory and jumped into the stands like an idiot. As you can see, there is a legacy that many people actually believe this. Never mind the fact that Derek Jeter's actually a 14-time All-Star. He's a 5-time World Series. He was the Rookie of the Year. He's a 5-time Gold Glove Award winner. Never mind all those little facts, right? But Derek Jeter is an interesting case study in that the dude is a freaking legend. As we just stated, he's the most popular current baseball player of all time, like literally and figuratively. So we know that, you know, about his legendary status, but he really was never the best player in Major League Baseball. And I was trying to find a comparison. Like, what do you compare Derek Jeter to? There's nobody in Major League Baseball right now that's like Derek Jeter. There might be players that are better than Derek Jeter. You know, the Bryce Harpers and the Mike Trouts, we haven't seen athletic skills like this. You know, the Yasiel Puigs and the things they can do in the outfield. From an athletic barometer, you know, Derek Jeter wasn't the best player. But you know, the dude was a magnet, not only for hot chicks, but a magnet for success as well. The dude was at the right place at the right time all the time. And one of the greatest of all time, the great one, Wayne Gretzky, of course, famously stated, you don't go where the puck is, you got to know where the puck is going to be. And as we saw with that famous flip play against the Oakland Athletics, and it's true, if Giambi would have slid, he would have been safe, but he didn't. And what the hell was Jeter doing there in the first place? He was there because he visioned it. He saw it before it happened. That's what made Derek Jeter so freaking great. And, you know, when you look at the great Yankees, and it's amazing, you don't figure there's no way in hell anyone could ever be bigger than Babe Ruth. How are you going to be bigger than Joe DiMaggio? How are you going to be bigger than Mickey Mantle? You look at the beacon icons of the New York Yankees franchise. You know, Ruth, Mantle, DiMaggio, Costanza, Derek Jeter. Well, when it's all said and done, Mike Trout might be better. Bryce Harper might hit the ball farther. But you know what? There's only one Derek Jeter. And we threw it out there on Twitter, actually. Who do we compare Derek Jeter to? Sort of in the grand scheme of all sports. He's not Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player. Derek Jeter's not the best baseball player ever. He's not Wayne Gretzky. Very, very similar situation. You know who I believe he is? He's Tom Brady. He's Tom Brady. 5-time winners, you know, people, he's part of the system. Tom Brady today said it's true. I am a system quarterback. If I wasn't with Belichick, I wouldn't have the success that I did. You look at Tom Brady, the 5-time winner, the Mr. Popularity. Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. But was he ever the best quarterback in the league? You know what I'm saying? You know, Aaron Rodgers is better than Tom Brady. You know, there's guys that are more athletic and throw a better football. But all things combined, they're not better than Tom Brady. That's who Derek Jeter is. So when it's all said and done, say what you want about Derek Jeter. He doesn't care because he knows you're not Derek Jeter. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's do this as we start off another week. Steve Merrill's batting leadoff. We've got Paul Bovey going to check in a couple of minutes. We'll talk Game 7 of the Wizards and the Celtics. We're going to talk some baseball. We open up the show talking about Derek Jeter. One of the great memories of, I've been to a lot of baseball games over my life. One of the great memories of being at Yankee Stadium, just hearing Bob Shepard say that. Richard Griffin's going to join us, longtime baseball beat writer. He's been with the Jays for a long time right now. The Jays are one of the hotter teams in baseball. We'll talk some baseball with the man who joins us right now, Steve Merrill. What's up, Steve?
What's going on, Gabe?
You know, Steve, I would have known you were going to be wearing baby blue. I wouldn't, it's a little awkward right now, but...
this is the shirt you wear under the jersey. This is just like a plain blue, like dry fit shirt. So yeah, I think you win. Yeah, you got a little more style to yours.
Rocking the Tar Heels. You know what? The North Carolina, they can't escape Michael Jordan's legacy. Huh? To make a Tar Heel football jersey, number 23.
And he's still probably one of their best football players ever. Although actually a Williamsburg native. We're talking about all the, before we went on today, we're talking about all the William & Mary connections. Lawrence Taylor went to high school in Williamsburg, actually, and then went to UNC. And he played at the same high school as Mel Gray. I don't know. They might have been on the same team even for a year or so, the kick returner for the Lions, Mel Gray. But Lawrence Taylor, probably the best UNC football player ever.
Yeah, yeah, Lawrence, for sure. There's been some decent players. I tell you, the Chicago Bears are hoping that Mitch Trubisky turns out to be a decent one. You know, it was a good day. Lawrence Taylor's obviously the staple off the top of my head. I would say the second one would be Julius Peppers.
Yeah, Peppers, yeah.
Julius Peppers.
Yeah, his career probably got cut a little bit short compared to Taylor's, which is ironic because Taylor was using cocaine and still stayed healthy, whereas Peppers, you know, has had some injuries down the stretch, but he was, in his prime, he was pretty dominant.
Yeah, yeah, cocaine is a performance enhancer, Steve. I think we've established that, but that's besides the point. All right, so we've got Game 7 tonight. With the Wizards and the Celtics. The home team has won all six games in the series. Finally, we had the home team not cover, though. Boston got the cover the other night when they were laying five. The home team's 10-0 now, straight up on the year between these two. And when we talk about history, I don't have to tell you. You're a Wizard, you're a Bullet, Wizard, Redskin, Capital guy. So the history of Washington sports, not good in Game 7s. The Wizards haven't been this far since 1979, so we're going back a ways. The Boston Celtics have the legacy. They're 18-4 all time in Game 7s at home.
Yeah, and they've played 30 of them, which is the most in NBA history. As you said, the Wizards, none of these players were even alive. Most of them weren't alive. Probably all of them, actually, the last time they even had a Game 7. The bottom line, though, is home court dominates Game 7s. All-time NBA playoffs, Game 7 home teams are 101-26, 80% straight up. It went 4-1 last year. However, one time this year, the Jazz beat the Clippers outright in Game 7 in the last round. So, be interesting to see what happens. But if you ever think there's a series where that 80% straight-up record in Game 7 should hold up, it's like you said, it's in the series where the home team is 10-0 this year. And the Wizards, you know, escaped with a win in Game 6, probably should have lost that game. So, Boston looks like they're starting to turn things around. They got outplayed in Game 3, which was a bad spot for them. Had the lead in Game 4 until the Wizards went on that 26-0 run. Boston dominated Game 5 and easily could have won Game 6. So you got to favor the home team here in Game 7. The question is, do they win by more than 5? It's obviously a hefty price for what's been a very competitive series.
Yeah, but it's really rare as well that we get a Game 7 that really comes right down to the wire, too. That's just too overly dramatic. Life's not a Disney movie, right? And it's interesting, Steve, I saw a stat. The last six times there was a Game 7 in the NBA playoffs, six times in a row, one of the teams didn't get to 100 points.
Yeah, well, that was last year and this year, because there were five last year and this year. So, yeah, the last two seasons, basically. You're right, yeah.
Yeah, so basically, you know, one team sort of hits the wall. They sort of realize, you know, Steve, we've seen when the Rockets quit in the first quarter the other night, but we often see teams, that realization kicks in. We're not coming back. We're down by 12. There's 4 minutes left. We're screwed. You know,
but it's surprising, though, because you would think that's when all the hack and fouls start.
They're quitters.
Yeah, it's a total different mindset than college basketball. It's an excellent point, Gabe, because we talked about this back, you know, a month and a half ago about all the overs in the NCAA tournament because of all the fouling, because it's a one-and-done scenario. I think part of it also is these guys aren't used to a one-and-done scenario. They play all these seven-game series. They play 82 regular season games. And like you said, they're spoiled. They're making millions whether they win or lose. But, yeah, really amazing what a difference it is between college basketball where you see them just fight till the end. And you don't see that as much in here. Another thing about game sevens, you always kind of lean to the under just because you get more defensive intensity, which is something that misses in the NBA playoffs and in the NBA regular season especially.
So what do you make of that tonight? It's hard, though. 210's not that many points. You know what I mean? It's a manageable number. When you consider they're averaging 226 in the series, and it's been pretty consistent. They can't stop each other.
Yeah, I agree. And that's probably what'll keep me off the total here. I always look for reasons to play unders in game sevens, but other than that, I'd actually probably lean towards the over here tonight. The value and the way the series has gone, and you just feel like both teams are capable of scoring. You know, game six, we saw a little bit more defensive intensity. Whether that carries over to game seven or not, we'll have to see. But, yeah, it's just weird. You would think that they would be fouls down the stretch. They wouldn't give up, but you're exactly right. That number about, you know, the last 2 years, every game seven, a team hasn't gotten to over 100. One of them is really remarkable.
All right, so, you know, it was remarkable. The Spurs blew a 25-point lead.
Incredible.
Like they blew, and listen, if Kawhi, and I hate that always, well, if this didn't happen, that wouldn't have happened. But if Kawhi Leonard doesn't get hurt, they don't blow that 25-point lead. Like they would have had a basket or two enough to, you know what I mean? Kawhi would have settled things down a bit. But I swear, it's the third time, Steve, in like 10 days that he sprained his ankle. It's catching up to him. I don't think he's going to play tomorrow.
Yeah, and you got to wonder, what does San Antonio have left in the tank? I mean, you know, they had that impressive Game 6 win on Thursday night, shorthanded, over 30 points. Then they have to travel, which is a really bad situation. Golden State had almost a week off, well-rested, stayed at home. And San Antonio just smacks them around for the first half of that game. And then they blow that lead. You know, there's two ways to look at it. The Spurs were good enough to be up by over 20, but then again, Golden State was good enough to come back from down by over 20, outscoring by even more. And the second half is what matters. So I still think Golden State's the better team in this series. And if anything, that might have been a wake-up call. And now with Leonard's status up in the air, you know, the top two scorers for the playoffs per game were Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker this year. Tony Parker was fourth during the regular season, but he was second in the playoffs till he got hurt. I looked at the three regular season meetings. The middle game, they sat a lot of guys, Golden State, so you got to throw that one out. The two meetings with it, both teams had all their players this year. San Antonio had 20-point leads in both of those games as well. And Tony Parker was terrible in both games. He was minus 19 points on and off the court, and he had no points in the second meeting. So I actually think they're better without him in this lineup. So it's not a surprise they played well yesterday, but without Kawhi Leonard, it's a totally different story.
Yeah, people forget they waxed them by 29 on opening night. You know, but we saw, listen, the Warriors struggled out of the gate. They hadn't played in 8 days. They were a little bit rusty. They were refreshed, but they were rusty. They shot 27%. I think in the first quarter. And then we saw what happened when they dialed in and turned it up a notch. But it is interesting you say that, Steve. It's really too bad for Golden State because they really showed something. Manu Ginobili's been around a while, so he's honest. He admitted after, he goes, this is going to be very tough to come back after a loss like this. We would have been better off losing by 20 points. Like he's even admitting it. Like, yeah, this is bad. Like he understands how devastating that is. But it's amazing, Steve. You look at the Golden State Warriors. People forget 2 years ago when they won the title, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love were banged up. Man, Love was out, Irving was in and out. He was really injured. The Utah Jazz, no George Hill. I know George Hill's not a household name. He's their freaking point guard. You and I talked about this. You know, George Hill was out. They played the Blazers. The Blazers came alive in the second half of the season after that deal when they got Nurkic from Denver. He was a stud. He wasn't there for the most part. They forced him in late when he was hurt. You know, Portland were a legitimate, like, dangerous team with Lillard, Nurkic, and McCollum, but they lost. It's amazing. Like, Golden State are great, but the last few years, almost every playoff series they play in, the other team's best players aren't playing.
Yeah, what about Cleveland? I mean, they get the Pacers in the first round, and then they get a shorthanded Toronto squad in the next round.
I know. Yeah, no Kyle Lowry.
Like, right. It's like in Cleveland, you know, and they're going to catch now either Boston or Washington off of Game 7 with, I guess, one day. I'm sure it'll be Wednesday, right? It'll be Game 1.
Yeah, it has to be, yeah.
So, you know, although they might have to travel to Boston, which would be interesting. By the way, you know, one of my big pet peeves and yours as well. After tomorrow night, the Western Conference will have played two games in the finals, and the Eastern Conference finals haven't even started yet. It's just crazy.
I did a thing on my podcast last night about that. I'm like, that's the thing I hate about the NBA. So you never know when they're playing. So we were playing guess when the next game is last night.
Well, and this might be a sweep now that Leonard's out. Golden State's a 14-point favorite tomorrow in game two.
I know.
Game three is probably, what, Friday maybe, and then Sunday with Memorial Day.
No, Steve, they pushed it to Saturday. Four days off, Tuesday to Saturday.
Wow. For that tough trip from Golden State back
to Texas,
back down to Texas.
Yeah, on the private charter.
a 2.5-hour flight.
Yeah, 2 hours and 15 minutes of, you know, eating steak and eating fruit when hot stewardess is on a private plane.
Right. Yeah, the NBA, I mean, you know, if there's ever a time for a conspiracy theory, now is it, because the NBA is going to be missing out on some big TV ratings if these series all go four games. And they're going to have to pull some magic now for the Spurs, probably, if Leonard's out.
But could help the Spurs. They could lose tomorrow, but a nice four-day rest could help Kawhi Leonard's ankle. I don't know how severe it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's even more of a reason why he probably doesn't play tomorrow. And obviously, at minus 14, that is already priced into the line. The line is saying
if you're the Spurs, all right, listen, we're not winning this game. We're going to go down. We're down two. Let's rest Kawhi up. We're going to go back home, and we'll get the two back. You know what I mean?
I agree.
That could be their mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's exactly right, and that's why he's doubtful, and the odds makers are basically saying he's out at minus 14.
All right, we've only got about 3 minutes here, Steve. NASCAR, props to you once again. Well, 2 weeks ago, you were all over it with Stenhouse, but once again last week on the way out, you're like, don't forget about Truex. Don't forget about Truex. Truex Jr. gets it done, but second week in a row, and you talk about it. What do you see more on the front page of websites, Steve? Almirola going to the hospital and crashing, and Danica Patrick on fire, or Truex winning the race? Crashes,
isn't it amazing?
Crashes win every time.
Yeah, but here's what I was thinking, Gabe, as I was watching that fiery, scary crash, and then they basically sardine canned his car open to get him out, which just made it even scarier, is that's the week after Talladega, and we talked about this a week earlier. We were both a week early about all the big crashes and the danger. Almirola won the Xfinity race at Talladega, and then he gets injured at the next race at Kansas, which isn't a really dangerous track, although it's fast. It just shows you never know. Truex Jr. was the best car at Kansas last year, had bad luck, did not win. He was fast again this week. And the reason I want to bring him up real quick is because now we're at Charlotte for the All-Star race, and then next week, the 600. The most dominating performance in recent history was him at the 600 last year. He led like 300 and some laps in that race. So you definitely want to have him on your card the next couple of weeks.
Interesting. We'll have some fun breaking down some All-Star props this weekend. NASCAR All-Star from Charlotte this weekend. And like Steve said, a Coca-Cola 600 the following week. Right, power rankings, baseball, the Astros spoiled Derek Jeter night last night. Tanaka's been struggling recently, Steve. Like a lot of home runs has been given up. Could tell early he was in trouble last night, even with the first couple of pitches he threw. Astros number one in Steve Merrill's power rankings. You can read these over at coversexperts.com. They took 3 or 4 from the Bombers. They're in Florida tonight. I guess it's not the best thing, but whatever. New York, Florida is not that bad. They're on such a freaking roll. I don't want to get in the middle of this. And I saw Mark Lawrence in his coffee club today. The Astros are 6-1 in game ones of series.
Yeah, and look at last week. The Cubs and Yankees played the longest interleague game ever on Sunday night. The Yankees had to travel to Cincinnati, and they came out fast and put up several runs in the first couple innings. We always talk about offensive momentum, and Houston definitely has some right now. So, yeah, even though it's not a great scheduling spot, I think you don't necessarily want to be going against that momentum.
It's a pick 'em. That's another thing, Steve. You have the best team in baseball, 26-12, and they're basically a pick 'em against the Marlins. And it's not like the Marlins have some ace on the hill or anything like that. You know, it's Straley. It's Dan Straley.
Yeah, what I'm doing with these power ratings, I'm really juggling teams more this year just for fun. You know, it's really based on current momentum is what I'm trying to look at. Kansas City had been my cellar dweller for several weeks now. I bumped them up several spots. They're finally starting to heat up offensively. San Diego now has the worst batting average in baseball. I've got them dead last now. The Nationals continue to hit the ball well, but I dropped them to third because that bullpen cost them again yesterday on Sunday. They've got to fix that bullpen. It's going
to
hurt them.
They were lucky to win the nightcap of the doubleheader. The bullpen was shaky late.
And Saturday they had a 4-0 deficit, and they came back and won 6-4. The bullpen actually won that game for them, so you just never know.
It's crazy, though. But, you know, they last night the Nationals blew like 4 leads in the second late. I was on them last night. It pissed me off. They won. But, all right, speaking of a team declining your power rankings a little bit, I think last week we had the Blue Jays 27th or so. up to 21 right now. They've won 5 in a row. They've won 8 of their last 10. They're getting a little bit healthier. Morales is back. Tulowitzki participated in a simulation game. They get the Braves right now, too. Tonight, I think it's a winnable game for the Jays tonight.
Yeah, I keep waiting for Toronto to turn it on. We talked about it last week. They've been slow starters the last two seasons. They've been some of the best teams in baseball the last 2 years after that. And this could be the buy sign, like you said, winning 5 straight and 7 of their last 8. Batista had a couple home runs, but he's still batting just 182 for the season. You got to figure he's due to start hitting the ball as well.
All right, before we get out of here, a couple of other Major League Baseball betting trends to keep our eye on. The Texas Rangers are on a 6-game win streak right now. The Kansas City Royals, Steve just mentioned, they're 4-0. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They've been grinding away. A team, I've been fading these guys because they're a mess, and I follow them. The Mets, Steve, 0-4 in the last 4. I know they're 5-5 in their last 10, but I would expect the Mets to continue to struggle. And the Orioles, I'm not hitting a panic button. They've been rolling. They had their first little bad run. They've lost 4 straight. They're in Detroit Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, the Nationals, you know, that bullpen's not going to hurt them in the NL East because nobody can catch them. You know, the Marlins, the Mets have been terrible, as you said. The Mets have a lot of injuries as well. Their offense is weak. They have to rely on pitching. Matt Harvey just came back, gave up 5 runs. Syndergaard's been hurt. DeGrom's got something now. The Mets are all pitching, and those guys are injured, so it's going to be a long season for New York.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
Steve Merrill with us. All right, we'll continue to talk some baseball. I look forward to getting Richard Griffin's take on the Derek Jeter ceremony last night and his take on why the Toronto Blue Jays are heating up right now. And all that and more. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Fun times with Steve Merrill. Richard Griffin's on deck. Griffin will join us in a couple of minutes. I look forward to his take on Derek Jeter. And where does he rank Derek Jeter in the grand scheme of things? We talked about it earlier. Who do you compare Derek Jeter to? He's never really the best player, but the guy's such a stud and such a winner, right? So, I don't know. Speaking of studs and winners, let's bring Paul Povey in right now. VegasInsider.com's Paul Povey. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Gabe. Thank you for calling me a stud. I haven't heard that word in a long time, but I love it, man. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean it. A stud and a winner, Paul Povey. So, Derek Jeter, you know, I said he's not Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was like the dominant superstar, leading scorer. That's not who Derek Jeter is. You know, and somebody tweeted me and they said they think Derek Jeter, they could compare him to Tim Duncan. And I said, I can live with that. I look at him like Tom Brady. You know, Brady wins all the time, but Brady's not the best quarterback, but he's a big, big game guy. He's got that aura of winning, Mr. Popularity. I see Jeter and Tom Brady as very comparable. What's your take on Derek Jeter as a New Yorker?
Derek Jeter's like the couple that's been married for 65 years. You got to hold the guy in high esteem because he was a Yankee from day one, and I think that was back in 1995, 96, throughout his entire career, which Michael Jordan can't claim that honor because he did go to the Wizards for that brief period of time. So you got to give Derek Jeter a lot of credit there for his allegiance to the Pinstripes.
All right. Well said. So let's talk about Game 7 tonight in another franchise. Would say the Yankees, you know, the Celtics are the Yankees of the NBA, so to speak. So, you know, the Boston Celtics, they've got the legacy. They've got that aura. And I think it means something. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. And it's funny because people are talking about the Celtics are 18-4 all time in Game 7s at the Garden. I think they're 21-10 all time in their franchise, whatever. But I read a good point that somebody brought up. Bill Russell was 10-0. So we take the Bill Russell era out of it. But you know, I do believe in the aura of the Garden still. I do believe in that green jersey tonight. I do believe in the fans. I do believe in the home court as opposed to the Washington Wizards coming in here. That, hey, you know, the Wizards haven't been this far since 1979.
I remember one playoff game. I think it was the 7th game of the Celtics, and it was like 100 degrees in there.
Yeah.
There's just something that goes on in that Boston Garden. But still, I'm going to side with the Wizards here, Gabe.
Wow.
I don't know how they won that game. We discussed it last time. Their three-point shooting has been less than stellar, and they go in and brick it, 19 out of 24, hit the rim, clank off, and yet they still win a basketball game by outscoring them 48-26 in the paint. And if I'm Scotty Brooks, I'm keeping Martin Gortat on the floor tonight for 40 to 44 minutes without question, because he will win you a basketball game here.
Very interesting. So you're calling the upset. John Wall, to me, and I'm a big John Wall fan. I think he's underrated. Everyone talks about Westbrook. Everyone talks about Harden. Everybody talks about Curry. Everyone talks about Durant. Nobody ever gives Wall his just due. And to me, John Wall has been the best player in the NBA playoffs, Paul.
Well, he's been great defensively, and that's what people are not recognizing. I think when he's spotting on his man, he's held the guy to a really dismal percentage. So you got to give it to him on both ends. But the point I made about Gortat before is over the last five games, he is a plus 54, while the Wizards have only outscored the Celtics by 12. He's giving you 2.3 assists. He's 56% from the field, but for some reason, he logged 81 minutes the first two games, and over the last four, he's only put in about 107. So he's playing less minutes, and he's killing them on the boards. Actually, one rebound every 2.1 minutes. So Beal had an awful game in game six. I think he missed his first six three-pointers, or first seven. Hit a key one down the stretch. But they got to keep Gortat on the court, get some productivity from Beal, and just let Wall continue to do what he's been doing. And they'll win this basketball game because they're killing him inside.
Paul Bovey with us. You know, Paul, it's funny when I saw that they haven't been this far since 1979. That's actually the first NBA Finals I watched. And I have a pretty good memory, like, of being from my childhood years. NHL hockey, listen, my grandfather played hockey and stuff, so I grew up more around hockey. So NHL hockey, you know, I start to click in around 1975 or so. You know, I've got memories of 75, 76, and upwards. Baseball, first World Series, it was the Reds and Red Sox, the Carlton Fisk, right? You know, but my first NBA Finals was a little bit later, 1979. And you probably remember, people don't realize this, it was on tape delay. I remember I was nine, I asked my grandfather, can I stay up? It's the NBA Finals, I want to find out who won. And he's like, yeah, why not, it's the Finals. And it was Lenny Wilkins, Seattle Supersonics beat the Washington Bullets.
You know, I think it was 1980 when the Rockets played the Celtics, it was also on tape delay because I recall that vividly. And yes, 1979, if you're trying to test me, Wes Unseld, Kevin Greavy, Mitch Kupchak, and Elvin Hayes.
Wow.
I remember it well.
Mitch Kupchak. Yeah, you know what? We're actually, I think we're going to have Lenny Wilkins on the show later in the week. You know, just to go down memory lane. That's some good stuff. Yeah, but that's when I got into it. And then, you know, who was my favorite player when I was a kid, when I was like 11 and 12 and stuff? Dr. J was cool, but I liked Tony, the point guard on the Sixers. He was my guy. You know, that Sixers team with Malone, Tony, Cheeks, and Dr. J. Because everyone was like, oh, Boston and L.A. and stuff. I was like, man, these guys from Philly, no one giving these guys love. You know, I liked that Sixers team when I was a kid.
Hey, don't forget Bobby Jones, man. He had those long arms, and he was quite a defender.
Yeah, all right. So you're calling the upset tonight. Money line, too. So you're taking the points? You going to take the money line, too?
No, I'm just going to take the points. I already played props on Gortat because, as I said, if Brooks plays this right, Gortat will get his numbers. And I like the team total in the first half.
What about the total? We've only got about 90 seconds here, Paul. What about the total? Do you expect the tempo to slow down a little bit because it's game seven?
It could get tight at the end. So that's why I took Wizards first half team total over 51.5.
All right.
I think it's a good number.
We got 60 seconds. Spurs, Warriors, tough break, man, literally and figuratively for the Spurs yesterday. They lose Kawhi Leonard again. Third time the guy sprained his ankle, man, like in the playoffs. They're getting 13-14 tomorrow. Good call by you. You said, hey, why not? Let's take the points. What happens in game two? Quick take.
Kawhi, I don't know if he'll play. And if he doesn't play, look, the team was a plus 21 with him on the court in 24 minutes. So for the other 24 minutes, they were a minus 23. So what do you make of this? You can't play the game unless you know what the situation is with Kawhi. It's impossible to do it. It's just a guess.
You know, I just brought this up with Merrill. If I'm the Spurs, I see them tomorrow. I bite the bullet. We get tattooed, and they're off until Saturday. They have 4 days off after, and you hope for the best, right? But it really is too bad because they really showed, man, they can play with these guys with Kawhi Leonard on the floor, and they could beat them.
Play with them. They held up to 16 points in the first quarter, and that was Golden State's lowest output for the entire year. Play with them, they would have won the game. Anybody from a Golden State fan, Warrior fans, that's beating their chest today, I would just kind of like keep it down and just be grateful for what happened yesterday. And I don't think it was intentional, but, you know, it's basketball.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional. I don't think. Even Kawhi said after, I don't think it was dirty. Hey, thanks for the time, Paul. You're a stud and a winner. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Always a pleasure, Gabe.
There's Paul Bovey with us. All right, Richard Griffin joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. If you missed the beginning of the program, it replays at 5:30 on television, 5 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and, of course, Red Heat and Rage Radio tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern, as the Raging Redhead Cam Stewart will check in from Las Vegas. He's on to day 9 right now, so I'm very interested in getting an update. So we spoke with Steve Merrill a couple of minutes ago about riding the hot teams when it comes to betting on Major League Baseball. The hottest team in baseball right now are the Toronto Blue Jays. But even the worst teams in baseball do win 5, 6, 7 games in a row a couple of times a season. That happens. The question is this a real turnaround, or is this a blip on the radar for the Toronto Blue Jays? Let's bring in a man who covers the Jays, has covered Major League Baseball for longer than he probably wants me to tell people on television right now. One of our favorites, Richard Griffin, steps up and in, Toronto star. Hey, Griff, thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
Good, Gabe. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great. So I want to get your take on this as somebody that's been around the game for a long time. Derek Jeter last night gets his place in Monument Park. It's amazing, isn't it, that nobody will ever wear single digits again for the New York Yankees. Yet Jeter's a polarizing figure. You know, there's that jealousy factor. They don't like him. And then, you know, we see, I saw Twitter last night. Overrated. Right place, right time. Was never even the best player on his team. Giambi should have slid. He didn't even have to dive into the stands when he caught that foul ball. You've heard it all, Griffin. What's your take on Derek Jeter?
Well, first of all, I would say that there's no doubt that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer and one of the great Yankees, but not one of the greatest players of all time. And being one of the great Yankees is enough to get all the accolades that you get, because MLB wants to promote players like Derek Jeter that have family values, you know, other than the gift baskets that he seemed to hand out liberally at one point in his life. But they love guys like that, like Cal Ripken Jr. and Derek Jeter. And Jeter, you know, you talk about longevity, but to me, 3,400 hits is 3,400 hits. You talk about longevity contributing to that, and that's why he's a Hall of Famer, and that's why he's being honored. But the fact also is that they went to the World Series 6 times in his first 8 years, and that's not an accident. I mean, he's part of a great young crop of Yankee prospects coming up. But he was the one who grabbed the opportunity of being an icon in New York and a family value guy. And he was genuine. I mean, I remember covering him in the late 90s and he was always Mr. Griffin this, Mr. Griffin that, and very respectful, and Major League Baseball loves that, and he deserves everything he's getting.
As you stated, it's not by accident, and I brought up Wayne Gretzky earlier, and of course the famous Wayne Gretzky phrase, you got to go where the puck is going to be, not where it is. Jeter had that intangible, didn't he? You know, look at Mike Trout. Mike Trout's the best athlete ever to play baseball, probably, right? Or you look at these guys in Harper and the athletic skills that they have, and Manny Machado, et cetera. But that intangible, I mean, back to that play against Oakland, how many games have you watched in your life? Have you ever seen anything like that? Like, what the hell was he even doing there? Like, to have the foresight and just sort of be guided there, that's just so Wayne Gretzky and sort of mentally above everybody else to me.
And, you know, I've seen 5,300 games in answer to your question, 5,300 major league games in person, never seen anything like that. And for anyone who says Giambi should have slid, nobody expected that the shortstop would have come over that far and do a backhand flip for the tag. Nobody could have expected that. And the guy who slid in that situation would have been called a hot dog. So, I mean, you see that, and then you look at David Ortiz. David Ortiz, another Hall of Famer, likely. He's a DH. He didn't play a position because he wasn't able to acquit himself properly at first base and it cut into his hitting ability and preparation. Meanwhile, Derek Jeter's getting ripped for not having the range on the fan graphs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that it's that this guy is one of the icons of the Yankees, and that makes it a little more important than being one of the icons of the Cleveland Indians.
All right, so speaking of the Toronto Blue Jays, we brought up our boy Cam Stewart, and we all know, like, I look at, like, you know, sports a lot like gambling. You know, if you're betting on games and you're 10-21, you need some wins. You know, the Jays needed some wins. And they've gotten some wins. And I got to tell you, when everyone buried them and, you know, the public, oh, they're done, they're toast, the season's over already, I said, no, it's not. And I said, they can chip away and get to 500 after 60 games. I said 30-30, you know, sort of as a target date. They've exceeded this. You know, I'm not saying they can win all four against the Braves right now, but 500 is it within grasp right now, within the next week and a half or so. What do you make of this? But will the pitching deficiency and the injuries start to catch up with the starters? The bullpen's been good. What's your synopsis on the Jays right now?
Well, Gabe, I got a stat that you're going to love. And this was heading into the Seattle series that, of course, they swept the four games. But heading into the Seattle series, they had played eight different teams of the 20 that they're going to play for the 2017 season. They had played eight out of 20. Those eight teams had a combined 29 games above 500, and therefore was a very difficult competition. And even if you take the Jays eight below at the time, it's still 21 games over 500. The 12 teams that the Jays had yet to play, including Seattle, were a combined 15 games under 500. So were the Jays as bad as they looked in the first month and a half? No. Are they as good as they look now because they picked on four replacement pitchers, AAA pitchers? No. But you had it right. I mean, after 60 games, there's a very distinct possibility that things will balance out because of schedule, because of performance. They came into the season guessing wrong on their bullpen. They had the wrong people in the wrong situations. And when you had a bullpen pitching the eighth and ninth innings, there's no turning around in that game. You're done. If your guys fail, you're done. And that they've corrected that issue with Osuna and the guys that they've got in setup roles for him. So, yeah, I think that the Jays are not as bad as they looked early. They weren't as good as they looked in the Seattle series, but it'll balance out. And, you know, there's still a good chance that they'll be contending in September.
Rich, it's tough. We always think we know people. You know, people know Derek Jeter. People know athletes because we see them all the time. And we sort of judge, he's a good guy, he's a bad guy. He's a nice guy, he's a jerk. And I remember I was in Montreal at the time covering the Expos during the McGuire, Bonds, and Sosa stuff. And, you know, Sammy was Mr. Smiles when the camera was on, but he was like Negan in The Walking Dead when it was off, right? He'd smash your head with the bat if he could legally get away with it, right? But from afar, and I've never met the guy, but I want to ask you, Kevin Pillar looks like a good guy. He seems like, hey, that's a guy we can pull for. And I tell you, man, every day, you know, you hit refresh on a computer, there's Pilar making a catch. There's Pilar coming up with a clutch hit. I know that was his first game-winning home run. I hate the term walk-off, so I'll call it game-winning. But I know that was his first game-winning home run. But you've been around Pilar. Is he a good guy?
Kevin Pilar is a good guy. He's a guy you would want to have a beer with. I mean, he's a guy that was undervalued coming out of a Division II school in California, was drafted in the 34th round or somewhere in there, and has a lot to prove. And the thing about Kevin Pilar is that there's a lot of scrubs that never would have had the chance to prove themselves, to improve at the plate, because nobody would have put up and stayed with them as long as they did with Pilar. But the fact that he plays defense and can be in there every day as a defensive player, if you bat him in tonight, that allowed him to develop. And I'm very happy, so happy for him, because he is a good guy. When you go in the clubhouse, he's one of the guys who's always out there, always willing to talk, even if he had no for 4 days. And that's how you judge players. And yeah, no, he is a way better guy than Sosa and guys like that you talk about.
Hey, Richard, it's always a pleasure, my man. One of these times when you got time, we got to get you in studio. We're right here in Liberty Village near BMO Field, so we'd love to get you here sometime.
Well, maybe when Cam comes back, we'll do a round table or something.
Yeah, sounds good. Always a pleasure, my man.
All right, good. Thanks.
There's Richard Griffin with us. We come back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. We've got a monster matchup in the National Basketball Association, the Washington Wizards and the Boston Celtics, Game 7. This has been the most entertaining series by far of the entire NBA postseason. Isaiah Thomas is balling. John Wall is balling. We've had confrontations. These teams genuinely do not like each other. It's hard to go against the pedigree of the Boston Celtics. 18-4 all-time game sevens at the Garden in Boston. The Wizards haven't really been here before. I know it's not the current crop, but that aura of the Garden and the banners and the fans, and not to mention these two teams have played 10 times this year and the home team has won all 10 times. Give me the Boston Celtics, minus the 5. We're going to go over the number, man. I might clamp down a little bit, but they're averaging 226 points per game in this series. I got to go over the number. NHL hockey, Pittsburgh Penguins and the Ottawa Senators. I cashed ticket with the Senators in game one. I think the Penguins are going to bounce back, but I don't want to lay minus 220 here. I'm going to take the Penguins minus 1 in regulation. If they win by 1 in regulation, I push. All right? If they get that empty netter, it's plus 155. The game goes to overtime, plus 550. That's worth a bet as well. Blue Jays are red hot. I think they win their 6 in a row tonight against Bartolo Colon and the Braves. We'll lay the 35 cents. And how the hell do you not take the Houston Astros against the Marlins? May the winners be yours.